the Hardwick as they turn for home.
To a challenging position just behind the leaders. Defoe keeps him tight there. Defoe holding in Anthony van Dijk. Communique leads Elecam. Up the inside, Alanak for the huge shock. Anthony van Dijk, Fanny Logan down the outside. Defoe the Grey still there, all in a heap. Elecam took over. Fanny Logan immediately challenges and moves swiftly to the lead here. Fanny Logan coming to
lengths
clear. Alanak continues to run a mighty race. Then behind these Defoe, but Fanny Logan continues to show the way. Alanak is pursuit, but up towards the line, it's Fanny Logan, who's home. Frankie Dettori salutes for John Gosden.
Second, there it is.
Alanak ran a huge race. Pretty close for third in the end. There was a whole flourish. Hamish got going late in the day, but wasn't good enough, I don't think, to get there. Third to five.
By a good three lengths, Ron, and John Gosden and Fanny Logan, who we loved last year, took a real shine to when we saw her arrive at Santa Anita. And this is a nice win for her. And Frankie, who was a little slow into stride the first couple of days, but has kind of found a little bit of a little stride here late with a couple of what? We've got four more today, or three more today, and eight tomorrow. So 11 more. 11-4 in this Hardwick.
My comment about, Frankie obviously is Frankie and one of the greatest ambassadors in the history of our business. But I want to comment on John Gosden. Had the absolute pleasure of dealing with him back in the 80s when he was in California when I had Fernando Toro. And he is just, well, you've dealt with him a bit, I believe. He's just one of the just classiest, nicest people in the history of people, let alone our business. And he's just a person you can't help but root for every time he leads one over. He's just magnificent. And, his wife, Rachel, I believe, is the mayor of Newmarket, and she's a fascinating lady, too, of which I have a lot of fond feelings for.
How long was he out west?
I want to say was there, he worked for Charlie Whittingham in his tutelage before he even took out his license, which lots of people didn't know that. I want to say he was around for about 4 years. And to be honest with you, in the early 2000s, before he got went for his run that he's on, that he's continued on, he had called me when I was in New York with Jerry Bailey and was considering maybe coming back to the States at the time, and then right after that, he hooked up with Sheikh Mohammed, and he's been on fire ever since. Has obviously built an incredible, crazy, great barn, and he's still on that run.
Well, this ended up Fanny Logan, the See the Stars filly, that went at 7-1. And this was also our man, Kev Humphreys. Last year, he was on Anthony Van Dyke, but he bypassed the favorite 8-5. And Coolmore, on a daily basis, actually, has had a short-priced fave, at least one, I think, each day, stubbed their toe. But Fanny Logan, a very nice score here for those that have been Kev. And Kev has had at least one nice score each day so far. Day four from Royal Ascot, and we've got the Commonwealth Cup Kamari for Wesley Ward. Did you see Wesley just get nipped in the Norfolk earlier?
Yes, I did.
That was tough.
You know the thing people have to understand, and it's just the ground over there on this week or in any European races is an equalizer. A horse that's 30-1 that handles a soft ground can be better than a horse that's 4-5. It's all about the ground. It's ever changing. They get rain in and out of there. Now, it looks like it's fairly firm today, just watching it, not real firm, which gives the horses from the States like Wesley's a better chance. But Steve, when it gets wet, it's a very big equalizer. And I tell a story all the time of a great Michael Tabor story. If you got a minute there, I'll tell it.
Sure.
I was with Gary Stevens. It was a sprint race. of which I had a guy call me. Everything was very quiet, like a month before Gary was going over, mark this race, and it was the handicap. I think it was the Wokingham, and they were betting on this horse, and the horse was a Michael Tabor horse, and it was a horse that I'm not even at the time really sure if it was in his name. But come race day, there's 30 in the race, and he draws 19, and Simon Callahan's father trained the horse, who was an absolutely famous old-time gambler in European racing, and he drew 19. So Gary gets to the paddock, and it had been raining, as they say, pissing down all day. I was there. He gets to the paddock, and Simon's father says to him, "You know what you're doing, Gary?" And Gary says, "Yeah, I'm going to break, and I'm going to go right," because as we know, they split. And Gary, and he looks at him, he says, "No, you're not." And Gary says, "What does this mean?" He goes, "You're going to break, and it's only a three-quarter mile race. You're going to break, and you're going to go left. And not only are you going to go left, but I've walked the course, and I know this course. I want you to be on the fence when you make your run." And Gary said, he pointed at Michael, and he says, "It just as long as that man knows what I'm doing, I'll do whatever you want." This is the honest to God truth. The horse misses the break. And Gary starts to tack over till he gets to about maybe the 12, maybe like 3 furlongs out, and he tries to make a gap because at that point he doesn't think he can get to the fence. Stevie gets shut off, and he ends up taking up and dropping to the fence. And there's a horse out in about the 7 path that's like clear, and the last 70 yards, Steve, this horse is 2 to this horse is 1, flying down the inside, and he gets beat like maybe a long neck. But I tell this story to people because in a million years, you wouldn't think anybody would come with that plan drawing 19. And then to almost get it done, it was just... If I ever write a book, that'll be one of the stories in the book because it's still fascinating to this day.
Well, get that. You've got to start working on that book, actually, Ron, because yeah. You've had too many interesting experiences, and Saturday may actually count as one as well. Let's hit a couple of the spots, and Johnny and Joel are very well mounted on the day, different spots. Let's talk about the big race, and obviously the hand got forced with Tappet to Win, drawing the rail. I mean, he was going to go forward no matter what, and Johnny has latched on to him for Mrs. Weber, and it just so happens that Johnny has become kind of replaced Jerry Bailey when there was the old Weber Mott, the BMW Bailey Mott Weber is what Charlotte used to call it, and Johnny has kind of become the replacement on that front in a lot of ways. Tappet to Win. And I guess there's only one thing to do, correct? That's go as far as you can.
Well, I think at this point, obviously, the late entry of Mr. Redham's horse is going to kind of dictate how Johnny rides the race. And, he's got to leave there and let him run because I don't think he's the type of horse he's going to obviously be able to wrangle back. And he's only got one horse to deal with, and I don't see if there's any chance that he's going to get in any kind of speed duel with Jose on the other horse. I mean, if Jose wants to go crazy, I'm sure Johnny's going to be clear of the third horse, or if Jose doesn't go crazy, Johnny will end up on the lead, and we'll just see what happens. The favorite is an awfully, awfully nice horse, and he looks like he's trained very well, and Barkley Tag has been down this road before, and it's like, I've heard this expression, and I use it too, it's obviously his race to lose, so we'll see what happens. you have a fighting chance. I mean, it's not going to surprise me at the eighth pole if I'm in front of that horse, and we'll see what happens. It's a horse race, and, you know, there's lots of things that can happen. The other horse can, you know, my deal with people is if there's a huge favorite in a race, it's always going to make me take a position with something else, even if it's for a dollar or two with a pick three or a $2 bet on something else. And I'm going to tell you why, because all the other prices are going to be exaggerated. You're going to get paid more, and you don't have to beat every favorite to come out with a profit. So a race like this, where this horse is going to be, you know, 4-5, 3-5, 4-5, somewhere in the middle, you take a position with a couple other horses, in which Tap to Win would be one of them, and see if you could possibly beat him. So it's horse racing, as we know, and it's a one-turn mile and an eighth, which is a unique distance. So we'll see what happens.
Talk about Max Player, and of course, a little bit of not a hubbub. You over the years, you've been involved with these kinds of situations, undoubtedly, and a double mount fee involved here for George Hall because of Dylan Davis's association with Max Player. But stylistically, I gotta say, not that Dylan can't boot this horse home. They won the Withers together, but Joel may really suit Max Player for his, you know, for whatever kind of run he's going to put in from either a stalking position or maybe a couple of lengths further back than a stalking spot.
The horses had a couple of good breezes, I've been told. This was kind of a last minute later situation for us to end up on this horse. He's trained at Belmont. He's trained well over the track. As far as the predicament that they were in with Dylan, obviously I've had those situations over the years, and the stewards ruled that he's to be paid, which I think is commendable for them. That he obviously had a commitment, and I think that's all. But I find it dandy, but I don't know a whole lot about what exactly happened. And fortunate enough to end up in the race. After we would have been on arguably the co-favorite in the race if Nadal was to have shown up. But we'll try and rally here and see what happens.
Hit a couple of other spots, and you've got an interesting pair of calls for Joel and Johnny in the Jiper. And Hidden Scroll is the most pick an adjective: mercurial, quixotic, enigmatic, whatever you want to use. What a crazy situation. And I think everybody knows that at some point the talent is going to, you know, the dots are going to connect and the right thing is going to happen. And, you know, not sure when that'll be. But here he is shortening up to 6 furlongs on the grass after the stumble that, you know, sent Johnny into the air like a champagne cork.
I'm gonna make a statement. Tomorrow's the day, and I'm gonna tell you why. Mr. Mott, who is I would consider him a very good friend and somebody that I've had the absolute pleasure of dealing with for a very long time. He's a horse person that he wouldn't say if he had a whole mouthful, generally speaking. I think he's quite excited about the way this horse has acted on the turf. And I think tomorrow, the way he's drawn, I haven't done the pace of the race yet, but I think if he can just get away from the gate, he's going to be in a very good spot. I think the turf course is going to be quite firm probably tomorrow. And I believe that he's going to run very well. I think you're asking me what I think tomorrow's the day, and we will see. I'm also on Neil Drysdale's filly, who has been she's just an amazing, amazing animal. She shows up every time. She will come running in this spot, even though it's against boys. I have a feeling she comes off a firm turf at Santa Anita and made up crazy amounts of ground going 5.5. And she definitely fits here. But, you know, for people that are playing exotics and everything, I just really think that Hidden Scroll, the way he's drawn, is going to be very much forwardly placed, and I think he's okay tomorrow.
How about that? Hidden Scroll, the 6, of course, and the Jaipur, and Oleksandra, the 2 in the Jaipur with Joelle. Again, he suits her as well, and I know that the Team Valor team, and including a couple of our partners with DT, Steve Carlin and Dr. Alan Miller, they've been excited about Oleksandra since her arrival in North America. Gamine for Johnny from the rail as well in the Acorn. Joelle lands on Danny Gargan's glass ceiling, who's going to be a big price. And it's funny, I wouldn't necessarily think of her as a win candidate in here to me, Ron, but I thought that glass ceiling, I won't be surprised if she runs an A race.
You know, Danny supplemented. I think he's looking for a placing per se.
Mm-hmm.
But if here's another situation, like an old famous gambler who will remain nameless because he's probably listening. You know, don't be afraid to take a position for a dollar, and you'll get paid because she's obviously going to be a price. So, if you want to mess around with a few dollar situations, that's not bad. I was going to be on Venetian Harbor, who of Richard Baltus's, it would obviously have been probably the favorite, and he had decided very late not to run her. So we ended up on Danny, and Danny he does an amazingly good job, I believe. He wins, and that's all that really matters from an agent's end of it. So fortunate enough to lose Venetian Harbor, but to be represented in the race.
Now, a couple of other spots around the card, I mean, in terms of stakes, of just 5 in the Wonder Again, but Speak to Me of Summer for Christophe, Blinkers and Lasix Go On with Joelle, and Antoinette for Bill Mott. That's in the Wonder Again for the two riders. Overall, I suppose, other than Gamine, who's even money, who do you consider the best chances for both of them tomorrow?
Interesting chance here for Johnny, I believe. The turf races are okay, definitely okay. Obviously, you got Todd Pletcher to beat probably with a filly that comes out of the Breeders' Cup that was 3rd, but that was November, and we're in obviously in June now. So maybe not completely ready for her best shot. Got Chad Brown that comes out of the Breeders' Cup too, off layoff. And I think my filly's got some recent races that are very good. And I think going back to turf is very interesting, being her first 2 races of her career were on turf. I think she's an interesting 6-to-1 shot. Christophe's filly, I know she's trained okay too, but I would prefer Johnny in here as somebody to get a good trip and be definitely okay in that race. Looking at the rest of the card, Steve, to be honest with you, with between both guys, I mean, I can't really tell you any one of them wouldn't light the board. I'm on a horse for Christophe in the Pennine Ridge called Decorated Invader. I can't really remember the last time I was quite so excited about the prospects of a young horse as this one. I think this horse is just something extra special. I mean, obviously, I tell people had the fortune of being around a lot of good horses, 34 Breeders' Cups I've been involved with, winners. This guy told Terry Finley in on a podcast or something for his people that the sky's the limit with this horse. This horse, I think, could do basically end up doing anything. He's just some animal. I'm very excited about, you know, not the gambling aspect of this horse, but just the prospects of him going forward. I think he's just something very, very special. So for everybody that's a fan of the game, or I think he's a free spot on the bingo card, and I'm not telling you a whole lot because he's 6-5, but I think he's just something special.
Going forward. Well, it's always special when we get a chance to sit with Ron Anderson, and it's always time well spent on any of the topics that we cover. Ron, safe travels for both guys today, tomorrow, going forward, and looking forward to seeing you at Saratoga. I don't know if you'll be... if you'll be sitting all alone in the chaise lounge, you know, sitting there in the middle of the quad.
Hopefully, we're able. But all up in the air.
Exactly. Well,
Steve, just for everybody,
Ron Anderson, everybody,
you're a treasure of this business, and everybody, I hope, appreciates your effort that you go through to get our business out in the mainstream, and I appreciate you, and I hope everybody else does too.
Ronnie, thank you. Ron Anderson, everybody, and one of the, if not the greatest jock agent of all time, and always a fascinating and very frequently valuable visit, and it's Belmont Week, and it wouldn't have been Belmont Week if Ron didn't join us. The only time he missed was when he was lying in a hospital bed, and has come back fitter and more ready than ever from that. Ron, be well, and I'll see you in Saratoga.
Thank you very much.
Ron Anderson, everybody, and we'll stay right here because Jay Pribman is listening in, and Jay joining us. He's got an eye on what's going on at Royal Ascot, and has been leading up to this Belmont Day, and he'll be sorely missed at lunchtime at King Umberto's. Jay Pribman, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, didn't travel for this Belmont. Had a streak from 96 till last year come to an end. So missing being there, but under the circumstances, there really was just no good reason to be traveling, especially with the media access and whatnot. We've got, obviously, you know, first-class man on the scene there every day in Dave Gretting. So it just worked out for this year to take a pass with all that's going on. So, but I am missing my week of engorgement at King Umberto's.
Well, they took the Pribman slice over under. They took it off the board in Vegas, and you know, you will be able next year. You will be able to say your streak is alive of 12 furlong Belmonts.
That's true. That is true. So
that's the way to package this. That's the way to do it.
I'll Jay, keep that hand.
Yeah. Yeah. There
I've
you go. Keep
follow.
That in
my,
the best
Ron
pocket.
Anderson on.
We've been doing a Ron Anderson Belmont Week visit for years because, you know, he would sit and hold court in the Belmont Cafe, and I'm just, you know, Belmont Cafe adjacent. And I 1 year I kind of waved him over, like, I don't know, 12, 14 years ago. And it became one of people's favorite segments because invariably he delivered, you know, two, three prices or you know, bankers. And Yeah, there's always something interesting to be gleaned from a Ron Anderson visit. And you know Ron essentially your whole racetrack
Turf Rider career. I've known Ron since 1982 when he had
Fernando Toro.
Yeah, when I first came on the racetrack right out of college, is when I met Ron, and we've been very, very close friends ever since. He's a great man, and he's had his hands in a lot of very interesting big race wins with the jocks he's represented over the years, like Antley and Bailey, Stevens. So what he's doing now with the double teaming with Velasquez and Rosario. So he's he knows so many people all over the world. I mean, literally. I mean, one of the reasons that Rispoli is in California was because Frankie Dettori rang Ron up and said, "You really ought to look at this guy. He wants to come to California, and I think you do well with him." And that's how he ended up there. So, just as a recent example, you know, Frankie Dettori called Ron Anderson. that's the kind of respect Ron Anderson has.
They're a perfect corollary. Looking forward, you know, when you listen to Ron talk about the card, and granted, these fields could have been bulkier and so forth, but there's enough intrigue, Jay. And let's set the table. There's a lot actually for you to cover, and I do want Laz Barrera conversation in here too, the weekend at Santa Anita, etc. But let's start with the Derby watch and this first leg of the 2020 Triple Crown.
Right. So, I mean, we all know all the touchstones of it. Mile and an eighth this year, one-turn race. It'll kick off the Triple Crown. And, a field that's a lot different than I think what we envisioned it was going to be just a few weeks ago, when it looked like you would have maybe the likes of Nadal or even potentially at the time, Maxfield. It's a good race. Really looking forward to seeing Tis the Law back home, where he won the Champagne. And seeing some of these late developing horses who now are in play for the Kentucky Derby, like, Tappet to Win and Dr. Post, to see if they can take a step forward, or if some of the others who have been kind of working, but just a cut below, the Farmington Road types, if horses like that can progress in this one. So it's a good race. I was really eager to potentially gamble against Tis the Law, because, from what I've written about him, I really think he does not like being drawn inside. The way he performed in the Kentucky Jockey Club and the way he's been ridden in his races to get him outside. And I thought if he was going to be a short price and he drew an inside box, he might be a horse worth this one time taking a shot against, but the draw couldn't have come up better for him. He should get a really, really good trip sitting out there, and he's going to be very difficult to beat, I think, on Saturday.
That's the way it feels. Everybody's always hopeful to find an alternative price scenario on the ticket cashing front, but there are circumstances we run into where the pace scenario seems to suit him, the way the race figures to set up, etc. The talent level, just everything is in that vein. Jay, you're always good in these positions to talk about exotic candidates and horses that may not be obvious to everybody further down the chart. Some thoughts on the other players.
I mean, the one thing I might, from a betting standpoint, not from a who's going to win the race standpoint,
right,
but from a betting standpoint, I think there might be value in Farmington Road. I thought his Arkansas Derby race was better than looked, in that he had to make an extended run from well back, and I thought finished well enough on the day. He's obviously a very pace dependent horse. He needs pace up front. My hope would be that maybe he could clunk along for second or even third, and if a pace develops between Tappet to win and maybe a four left kind of leans on him a little bit early. And if Pneumatic is pressing that pace, and if they just go a little quicker than you'd expect. You know, Modernist should be close, but I don't think he's got the kind of early speed that those other ones potentially do. And certainly Tis the Law will be close, but where he's drawn, he's going to be able to be right on top of them if they go too slow or ease back off just a bit if they really fly the first quarter, three-eighths or so, you know, down the backside. So my hope would be maybe some of the early pace wilts, Tis the Law goes on with it, and then maybe you can get a price home underneath. That would be my hope, but it's not going to be, I wouldn't call it a prime wager opportunity for me. I'll dip into the water, but I'm not going to, it's not going to make or break my gambling weekend, I don't think, on that one race. It's just it's not enough. I mean, I'm going to try it, but I'm not going to be like all in.
Understood. And the course, we should mention the point, you know, one part of this that has gone kind of under-reported or under-appreciated, perhaps, is, you know, the elevated point structure for the event. And, you know, the 150 for, what is it, 150 for the winner?
Yes.
60, what is it?
Yeah, just everything is increased by 50% from 100, from a, what 100 to the winner race would be. So just do the math.
There you go.
That way.
Perfect.
But yeah, I mean, that's,
so
obviously there, that's obviously a significant factor. We've had it in all of our stories. I can't vouch for how other people have approached it, but it's certainly something we've made mention. Dave certainly has it in his race advance. So, but that is obviously an aspect of it. And there's just, you know, so many other races that are going to come into play now regarding the Kentucky Derby, including the, you know, race like the Travers, is now going to be a race that horses could potentially run in and then come back 4 weeks later in the Kentucky Derby.
The 152nd Belmont Stakes, and some ways it feels like some of those classics from like a prior century when they used to, you know, when you read those footnotes, Jay, you know, run from 1862 to 1891 at Morris Park and at all the crazy distances. It's going to be one of those footnotes that hopefully we look back. It'll be hard to look back with any amusement by any means, but it just feels, I think a lot of people have echoed that, it would just feel fortunate that we're running any type of Belmont Stakes. So
exactly.
There it is for Saturday. Jay,
that's the attitude I think that you have to take. Otherwise, you'll just go crazy or crazier.
Exactly. Jay, some other thoughts on the card. I know you talked about the Acorn, and you seemed you had some thoughts about how that field shaped up with some emergent types, and also a returnee that I thought deserved a little bit of mention. The outside Cassie player for Tracy Farmer, Perfect Alibi, who was a nice 2-year-old and comes back in a heady spot.
Right, she was a good 2-year-old. She won, you know, Grade One winner. Her figs were very light last year, which would indicate that, you know, she was fortunate to have ended up in some races that were soft for per usual for that level. But she's obviously got, you know, quite a bit of quality. But it just looks to me like the two fillies that are coming into the race who are currently unbeaten, both Casual and Gamine are just better horses. They're both be making their stakes debuts, but they're faster. They look like they have far more upside than a lot of the horses that are in here. I mean, with, you know, the one with good current form, who I think is the most dangerous horse, is Arno Delacour's horse, Lucrezia. I mean, she's obviously run good races or two. Couple starts this year. She was second last time to Swiss Skydiver, who came out of that race to come out to California and win the Santa Anita Oaks in a romp. So of the ones with more current form, I think she's the most dangerous one. But the other two just look like they're, to me, a cut above. I thought Casual was visually very impressive in her two victories, including her last start at Churchill. I liked the progression from 6 to 7 to now a one-turn mile. And Gamine cuts back to one turn and cuts back from a mile and a 16th two-turn race to a mile around one turn, but she's a big filly. Stafford says, oh, like the big wide sweeping turns there. So, she's certainly going to be, she was well regarded before she ever ran and has lived up to those expectations. There's, some details regarding her last race, that I've outlined in my race preview that I would have people read before they might want to bone up on her history. But, I think she and Casual are the heavy hitters in that one.
Casual may not have as gaudy from a fig standpoint. People are looking at numbers, but I've been really impressed. To me, the storyline of her and Volatile are heavily intertwined. With Lady Tack and Miss Chapin, they're closely related, and they've really emerged simultaneously out of the barn. So I'm looking forward. The Acorn deserves plenty of attention as part of this card. Jay, any other thoughts? How about the three-year-olds going short? I mean, a little strange that, considering the division, that we didn't get more than five lining up in the Woody Stevens.
Yeah, no, it's a problem everywhere is short fields. I mean, everybody likes to mock California for their small fields all the time. But, I mean, look at what's going on here. One of the problems is that, a month ago there were four tracks running. And now there's 24? So you've just ramped up very quickly, and there's, the fall crops are down considerably from years, and we're still trying to run close to what we did in the past. It's an unworkable overall model. But so specifically to this race, though, the interesting horse from our Derby watch standpoint is Mischievous Alex, who won the Gotham in his most recent start. Now coming off the layoff, they've chosen to keep him around one turn, but if he does perform well here, the plan is to go on to the Haskell, where he would potentially meet Authentic, the Santa Anita Derby runner-up. And if he runs well there, then they would entertain possibly the Kentucky Derby. But, still a long way to go. I don't think he's a mile and a quarter, two-turn kind of horse, but obviously going 7/8, he's very, very good. So I'm sure he'll give another, terrific account of himself tomorrow. He's got some really good three-year-old sprinters in here, No Parole and Echo Town, and even I think Shoplift at cutting back will run a lot better. He just hasn't been as effective going two turns. I mean, he did win the Springboard Mile at Remington, but his races around one turn have been far better, and I think this cutback will suit him. And so it's a good little, even though there's only five in the race, it's still an interesting race. I don't think it's not like there's a 3-5 shot in here.
Well, earlier this morning, Jay, Pat Kelly, in the last, about an hour ago, came out. He's handling No Parole for Tom Amos and Maggie Moss. And brought him out, and first chance to set eyes on him. A big, good-looking horse, Luis Saez aboard, the Louisiana bred. 3-1, Maru, 5-2 for Jorge Duarte, and Mischievous Alex, 5-2, Echo Town, 9-5, and Shoplifted also for the Asmussen barn. And the Asmussen team actually helped kind of fill out quite a few of these races with some horses that came in from Kentucky. Jay, anything else from the card before we talk other topics?
And then the other race that I wrote the preview on, besides the Acorn, is the Jaipur, the grade one race around one turn. You know, I'm just really, I'm a fan of pure sensations. I just love seeing a horse that, like this, that's been able to have this kind of a career. I think it's a real tribute to, you know, Patricia, you know, Generazio, for what she's done regarding the breeding of this horse, that he's been sound and lasted this long, and the way that Clement has managed him, giving him a nice winter break every year. And this will be his fourth appearance in the Jaipur. He won it back in 2016. And he's going to go over the $2 million mark in earnings with this start. I'm looking forward to seeing him run, but from a gambling standpoint, I'm in on Stubbins. I thought he should have won his last start at Santa Anita. It was his first start off of a layoff. The extra distance going to six from 5.5 is going to be of benefit to him. He's 3-1 on the morning line. I hope he doesn't tick lower than that. I'm hoping that maybe, you know, there's a few others in here that'll take a little more money than what their morning line is reflecting at the moment, like Hidden Swirl being at 8, for instance. And I'm hoping that that results in Stubbins holding it at 3, and I would take 3 on him. That's a horse I'm very interested in gambling on tomorrow.
Stubbins seems to be a bit of a mojo player too. I picked him as well this morning.
Five
race. No, and I'll tell you what else. Mike Beer is on him too tomorrow.
Oh God, man! My paper says he's got 124 pounds. He's carrying 400 now. Oh my God!
Poor
horse.
I think there's more actually. I won't even get to who else. I think there's a bandwagon building, Jay.
that never works out well when everybody's on the same horse.
No, it's I know.
Anybody
that does this regularly.
Yeah, those are my thoughts on the card tomorrow.
Jay, I'm not going to have a chance. Maybe Hammer might have a thought or two, but the Santa Anita slate tomorrow, including the Las Barrera, where it feels like it's, you know, a potential another graded stake opportunity now at 3 for Collusion Illusion, and of course the Best Pal winner last year, and Mark Glatt brought him back three, 4 weeks ago, and he looked terrific. Any thoughts on the Las Barrera tomorrow?
I mean, obviously Collusion Illusion's an interesting horse. I mean, he did win nicely last time. He only got an 89 fire figure, so he needs to run better than that, and I still think he's still an unproven horse going two turns. I mean, his American Pharoah is a throwout. It was just a complete disaster. But, you know, he's unbeaten around one turn, and he's certainly the horse to beat tomorrow. He's going to be an odds-on favorite against an abbreviated field. And he's trained by a guy who's just come back absolutely firing since Santa Anita reopened. I mean, Glatt has been he's had a tremendous last few weeks to close out Santa Anita's meet. So, I think this horse is very good, but I think right now he's a very good sprinter. I'm still not convinced that he's going to stretch out successfully and be a two-turn kind of horse going down the line. But, you know, the one time he did go two turns is not a fair representation, I'm sure, of what he can do. That said, I still think he's going to end up being a better sprinter. So, you know, he should win this race, but what it's going to prove is open for debate.
Al Cools, who hasn't been seen since last fall, comes back for Peter Miller in here. Doug O'Neill has got Howbeit, a Secret Circuit, a Secret Circle Cult. Ragtime Blues for Baffert, It's so, you know, it's so funny to me, Jay. The union rags. I think everybody just thinks about the Belmont and, you know, has a certain mental image of what his get are supposed to be, and yet he gets plenty of quick types. And here's a colt out of a street cry mare, obviously a dedicated sprinter for Baffert.
So far, I mean, maybe he'll stretch out. He hasn't had a whole lot of chances yet, but yeah, you're right. I mean, at this point, he does look like a sprinter. He's very, very fast, he's got quite a bit of talent. I mean, he's certainly the second best horse on paper going in behind Collusion Illusion in this race. But he's another one who needs to get those buyer figures up a little higher to be considered a horse of the same caliber of some of the ones that we're seeing running in the Woody Stevens, for instance, tomorrow.
Well, we also the Wiltshire being run tomorrow early on the card, the 1 mile turf event, old Hollywood standard, and the Gamely winner, Keeper of the Stars, for Jonathan Wong comes back in here, and then there's also the Snow Chief for the Calbreds Saturday at Santa Anita. Jay,
you didn't mention the winner of the
some final thoughts.
You didn't mention the winner of the Wiltshire. I know Keeper of the Stars is maybe the headliner off the Gamely Wood, but Toinette is really good. She's going to be.
Yes, she is.
She's going to be one of the best of this division, I think, the rest of the year. So, watch out. Her comeback was obviously postponed because of what's gone on out here, but I really think highly of her. She was getting so good towards the end of last year and didn't run a bad race at all behind the best of the division in the Matriarch. So I think she's going to be really, really, she's one to watch out for in the filly and mare division on grass the rest of the year, I think.
We had, she had, it's funny, Jay, I always think of her now as the Tepin storyline. If we think back to that lead up to Derby that year, where it was Tepin's workout with the ill-fated Moon, I'm going to forget the first name, the Cassie hopeful for the Derby, and we all were like, who was that was working with? And it turned out to be Tepin, right? And Toinette was that horse last year into the Edgewood.
Yep. Yeah. No, she's. I really think she's very, very good. So we will see.
She's also 4-for-4. 4-for-4 at Santa Anita, and 4-for-5, only the Matriarch. Yes, 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 exactly. Poor Danzig Moon. Yep. Yep. No, exactly. Good job. Now, that is a gaudy looking sheet in the Daily Racing Form PPs. 4-for-4 at Santa Anita, Toinette, and 4-for-5 at the distance with just, she only lost to Got Stormy, Daddy is a Legend, and Juliet Foxtrot. So,
right.
not such a bad effort. The multiple graded stake winner, Toinette, and Keeper of the Stars facing off in the Wiltshire. And, Jay?
And you forgot the biggest story.
Dave Brennig is going to
tell us. My office has always told me, because they see all the data on clicks of what people read online, and he said you would not believe what kind of traffic we get on any story written about a track announcer. It's crazy. The amount of response on Twitter that I got to the story about Trevor taking the summer off and Larry Colmus pinch-hitting for him was crazy. I mean, it's obviously an interesting story, but the outsized amount of attention that that story gets, it confirmed what the data people back in New York have told me over the years about it, just how crazy it is, what kind of response those stories get. I mean, people feel so passionate about race callers. I mean, they've got their favorites and their opinions on it, and it's just wild. I wish people would put as much energy and passion into that as they do to trying to get takeout reduced, because then maybe it wouldn't be as usurious as it is in most places. It's just, it's wild, the response that that gets. But, you know, obviously, you know, it was a great situation for Del Mar to have a free agent like Larry available. And, you know, and Trevor's doing what he thinks needs to be done at this point in time. And I can empathize, you know, empathize with it because I chose not to come to New York this week, you know, because of everything.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it's just kind of where we're at the moment. I didn't feel like making, you know, two cross-country plane flights. So, you know, hopefully things are going to be better. It's a week-to-week situation. But, you know, Trevor needed to – he did the right thing. He gave Del Mar an early heads up. And, you know, hopefully we'll see him in the fall. In the meantime, you know, nice that Larry's able to have some summer work this year on the other coast.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you slipped that in, and I had not gotten to that yet. And I should also mention we couldn't. I lost the feed as they were getting ready to run the Commonwealth, and Kamari with a predictable slow start, and still managed to be a good third in the Commonwealth. Nice enough effort, but Golden Horde, superb, winning the Group 1 Commonwealth. There's the Queen's Vaz yet to be run in about 20 minutes, and then the Duke of Edinburgh closes out the Ascot. How have you done at Ascot this week?
Oh, I haven't been playing. I just like getting up and watching the races from there.
Enjoying.
It's just
yeah.
Too hard to, with the ground conditions and whatnot, to really be all in. But it's just fun to, I just enjoy going, you know, I've gone twice in my life. It's a great experience, and I just enjoy watching those quality races. And, you know, I've been friends with John Gosden forever as well, so I just really enjoy seeing the success he's had. I mean, I, you know, knew him back when he had Bates Motel, and he won the first Breeders' Cup Mile with Royal Heroine when he was training out here for, you know, nearly a decade before returning to England. And we've, you know, it's always great to see him when he comes over, like when he brings a Nabal for the Breeders' Cup or things of that nature, and just really enjoy. It's just been great to see the career that he's had since he went back, and to see him this week. He had the milestone 50th Royal Ascot winner, so it was wanting to watch that, and then, you know, earlier today won another race, so and he's won a couple yesterday. It's just, you know, the race with Stradivarius was just brilliant to watch, so I've been watching it more from that, you know, in that context than as a punter.
It's been year after year now. I mean, it's just kind of become such a highlight. It's weird that it overlapped this, you know, this particular year with Belmont. It hasn't really taken away necessarily from what, you know, we're leading into tomorrow, but I've really enjoyed it, and cashed a little bit, and it's been fun. Jay, enjoy tomorrow. We'll recap it next week, and we'll have the big Ohio Derby preview when we reconvene.
It's the battle for the East India Cup. It's going to be a great, great experience.
And Dave Grenig is going to join us in about 40 minutes or so. And Dave has got the story just posted with the Saratoga Stakes schedule, and as speculated, August 8th for the Travers. So we'll get those details from Dave when he joins us.
Very good.
Jay, I appreciate it. Jay Pribman, everybody. DRF Pribman, and watch for his coverage of Belmont Day the rest of the day and then into tomorrow. We'll stay right here. Rick Hammerly's going to join us before we break, and then Nick Tamaro and Dave Grenig to bring us home these couple of days at Belmont Park. And Hammer, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? I thought a little Elmer.
Good, Rick. Bud.
What? What'd you
yeah,
say?
Good.
Little
Nothing.
Elmer.
I was kind of giggling. Yeah.
So, yeah, there is something screwy going on around here. It's not Belmont Day, it's just the day they're running the Belmont this year. And but you know what? We're running it, so we should be very happy. Before we get going, I have a question that I was asked to ask you, and it's a food question. And so the first part is, have you ever heard of Carol's Restaurant?
Of course.
Okay. Well, they didn't have it back here because a buddy of mine mentioned, was talking about a club burger at Carol's Restaurant, and I didn't know what he was talking about. He's a U.S. Steve. I guarantee he'll know because we didn't have Carol's Restaurant here. So I said I would ask, and I go, I guarantee you, if there was a restaurant back there, you knew about it. So was it fast food, or was it just like a Denny's type?
Denny's is a good analogy. Carol's is more like the big boy chains, Abdow's and all of those,
Fritch's,
the one in Fritch's, Fritch. Well, we had Abdow's in New England. But Carol's, I've actually, if you look closely on those matchbook, on that matchbook frame,
right,
that I put up, we had so much fun with. There's a Carol, there's a matchbook from Carol's, as wow. It happens, that's on that frame. They're from. I want to say that they're. I think they were based up by us, up by Sarah, up either not Albany, but I think they're either a Buffalo. They were either from Buffalo or
Buffalo,
Syracuse or Rochester, something.
Yeah, Buffalo, that run there, the Buffalo, Syracuse, Rochester was mentioned, and I said, well, Steve will definitely know that. So
yep, there you go.
There you go.
Yep.
That's pretty wild.
Carol's, absolutely. was it somebody from out there that brought it up, or is it somebody?
Yeah, yeah. We were actually out golfing yesterday, and just a buddy was joining us, and he's kind of a racing fan, and obviously follows the show here and there, and I don't know where we come up with it, but he said, "Boy, I'd like a club burger," and I said, "What are you talking about?" And anyway, we start talking, and I said, "Steve's gonna know," and he did. So
that's great. That's great.
Good. I knew you'd love that. But so it's Belmont weekend, and it's also you had Jay on early. I guess Rizzo right before me, and I usually turn him down so I don't repeat, at least knowingly. But closing weekend at Santa Anita this week, and I think there's a lot of people that really. We're very happy to it was like the meet that wouldn't end, and stop and start, and with all the restrictions, but they're glad to get it over with, but glad to, now we have to move down to Del Mar, although some would rather stay if they could, just because of the financial and the hassle of moving down there, but I think they'll be glad to just be fresh down at Del Mar. Del Mar's accepting horses earlier than normal, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And they're starting earlier, on the 10th, going 3 days a week. And just a change of scenery will be great. Word on the street is they're going to try and get some owners in there at Del Mar as a start. And as you know, as we all know, we don't know which way this thing's going to go with the COVID. One day you wake up and think, wow, this is great. It's, hopefully going away. And the next day you wake up and you're worried that it's going to carry on. So they're going to start with trying to get some owners in there, which will be good. We just won't have the same flavor, obviously, as normally. But it was good to tune in Wednesday to Delaware Park, and then as you were watching some horses in the paddock, to see some railbirds leaning over the rail, checking out the horses for the races at Delaware. So maybe that'll become a little bit more common as we move through the summer.
Feels like it. It feels like we're with the handful that are already taking patrons in, and others that are poised to do it, Rick, and whatever format it takes, the red light, yellow light, green light, whatever concept.
Yeah, exactly, whatever it takes. And once again, too, just because they're open, if you don't feel comfortable, you don't have to go. It's like every day when you're asked to go somewhere, you give it the double thought. and everyone has their own safety guidelines in their head. And if you're asked to go somewhere and you just don't feel right, there's absolutely nothing wrong with saying, you know what, I'm going to stay home. So I think that's where people will tread lightly when they're asked to go there, and if they start going and feeling safe, they'll continue to go. But another different look, speaking of Del Mar this summer, obviously, is the announcer situation, where Trevor has elected to keep him and his family back in Minnesota, not make the trip, and just like what we're talking about. He says, you know what? I don't want to hit the road. I don't want to go somewhere new. And so he's going to take the summer off. And Larry Colmus, who is obviously available, has been signed on to do just the summer. And that's the way it is. Trevor's not, he's taking the summer off. And that's the way it is. And Larry's going to come in and do the summer. So good replacement out here. Of course, Larry's called out here before. He and Trevor were at Golden Gate Fields when I started. At the time, Trevor was down here and looking for other stints, and he would come up and do some Golden Gate. So Trevor was at Golden Gate, and Larry was the backup for Trevor whenever he had to go off and do things. So we had I had Larry and Trevor with me when I first started, and that's how I got to know Trevor and Larry, of course. So I've known Larry for a long time. And which leads me to, as I go down and I talk about announcers, there's nothing better than a good announcer, whether it's football, baseball, whatever it may be. I've been very, very blessed out here in L.A. to grow up with some of the best. But we're going to have this summer at Kentucky Downs, we're going to have Larry and Michael Rona together, which is a great, really, kind of a cool duo. But I'm going to ask you this question. Who is the best duo to share a mic here in the last 40 years? The two guys that worked the same track that shared a mic at the same time. Okay, I'm going to give this. Now, this is obviously what I say, but I'm going to give you a hint. It was at a nighttime track. Okay.
You're going to blank me on this, because that...
Okay. So, in the late 90s at the Meadowlands, we had Tom Durkin and Dave Johnson there in the booth at the same time. So
that's good. Good job.
That's a pretty good duo there. I just went back and thinking about it. That's when the Meadowlands was absolutely rocking, and it was kind of cool. They were just Dave Johnson and Tom Durkin. Both good guys, both still involved in the game. But it was very special to work alongside those guys at the same time. And then, of course, worked with Tom down at Gulfstream. And just been very blessed to be around a lot of good announcers. But anyway, so Larry will be down at Del Mar, and so that's a nice replacement to have as a tag team to get him to come back there. So that's what's going on there. It's good to see the races a little bit better this weekend than last weekend at Santa Anita. I know Flavian Pratt is the leading jockey. I don't even know who the leading trainer is, to tell you the truth. I didn't look up the standings, and I just haven't really kept up as I normally would. So I couldn't even guess who it is. But we'll be glad to mix it up. They got a few good races going on, and it goes to show the Belmont card today is, the Belmont card tomorrow. It's tough to put these stakes together. You can't just put them on paper. It's usually a long build up to get there, but you offer them and you live and die by the stakes sometimes. So some of the field's a little short, but you know what? We're still going to be out. We're still going to be betting. So it's just going to be a little different doing it from home than screaming from the grandstand. And the Belmont has turned into be. They've really done a great job over the last 10, 15 years of turning that into just a wonderful event. It has grown into my favorite Breeders' Cup, Triple Crown race by far. So we'll miss that. And you know what? We'll enjoy it that much better when it comes back next year. Oh, I didn't know which way you wanted.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, hey, we should be thrilled we're running the darn thing. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what out of the horses here that are running this tomorrow, how many end up going to the next one, and then obviously going on to the Derby at the end. But I don't know which races you wanted to talk about, but
whichever you want, and I do want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, you. Well, pull the plug whenever you.
Yeah,
got
the
it.
Queen's Vase.
I'm looking at that.
Yeah,
as well.
Go ahead.
We'll do into that. So as you look, you know, we look at the Belmont Field. It's different. It's different distance. It's different date. But you look at the players, and you know, the Triple Crown guys are still there. You got Mark Gasly, of course, who won the Belmont last year. Bill Mott's won a Belmont. Todd Fletcher's won a Belmont. You know, Doug O'Neill's got his Derbies and Preaknesses. Steve Asmussen, of course, won with Creator a few years ago. Great little run there. Barkley Tag, looking for a Belmont. Wish he had one a few years ago. And one new face, Linda Rice. New to the Triple Crown, not new to New York, obviously. And we wish Linda a little bit of luck in there. Linda's actually one of the first trainers I met when I came to Monmouth Parks. I've known her for a long, long time. So it'll be kind of cool to see her make some noise in there. But, you know, I don't think there's anyone that isn't going to think that Tis the Law is the horse to beat. I mean, I look at Barkley Tag as kind of the East Coast John Sheriff in a way, the way they you know, can take their time with a good horse and do the right thing. And, you know, used to get upset at these guys over the years because, you know, they didn't run as frequently as others. But with the results they've shown historically, kind of back off a little bit on that deal. But they're very similar, and they know what to do with a good one. And, I mean, what are the odds of having another New York bred that, you know, right now would be the Derby favorite going in? So I look for him. Sounds like Dr. Post is the wise guy horse. From what I'm hearing, he's going to get a lot of play. Of course, Todd does very well placing his horses here in the Belmont, winning numerous times. You know, I'd left out Patrick Biancone, but he's the Triple Crown with Lionheart. I think he ran second to Smarty Jones in the Derby back at probably that 94, something mm-hmm. like that. And you know what? He knows what to do with a good horse as well. And, you know, kind of an old school prep 10 days ago for Solo Volante. You know, come flying late, the old second half of the entry deal. But, you know, the recency might pay off. I know, I'm sure you handicapping other races this time of year with 90% of the horses having a layoff. When you see a horse that's, you know, run in the last two or three weeks, I give them a little bit of an edge. So I give them a little bit of a shot in here just with the recency, you know, coming back. You know, like I said, Patrick knows what he's doing. And but, you know, I think this is going to be a watch party for Tis the Law. And, you know, good luck to other people in there. But I'll look for him. And I guess that's maybe Solo Volante to, you know, come in and pick up some pieces later. But it'll just be happy to get this race off and over with. And then a couple other of the races there, smaller fields. Woody Stevens, I'm up and down. I'm in some contest that day, so I actually looked at all these races pretty good. The Mischievous Alex looks to be my pick in there. Looking for his fourth win in a row. And John Service doing very well, as he always does. What else? We got the Acorn. You know, another rendition of the Acorn with Bob Baffert. Has Gamine in there. I'm not totally sold on her, although, you know, the one turn mile on the rail, she breaks. It's going to be very, very tough. She's going to control everything from up there. But Arnold Delacour's horse is intriguing. Lucrezia, I don't know what kind of price we're going to get on her at 9-2, but I look for her to run a big one. I mean, she's run second to Swiss Skydiver, who has really turned into a real nice filly. Came out here, of course, and won the Santa Anita Oaks, and not shamed at all running second to her, and is a stake winner, a multiple stake winner, so we'll see how she does in here. And, you know, the Jaipur, a good race. Now, that race used to be 7 furlongs, right? And in my head, it's still 7 furlongs, but they run it at 6. I don't know why it got shortened. I thought it was a really good race. And, you know, that student in the back of the class that's always mouthing off, but you know is really smart, Hidden Scroll. Hey, Bill has been very, very patient with him, and we know what he can do when he puts his mind to it and really wants to run. Of course, last time he lost the start. He was in another turf sprint, so... You know, they're trying something here. I mean, going a mile last time, excuse me. They're trying something here on the. I think this horse actually has a shot today. Sprinting, I think sprinting is pretty good for him. So we'll take a look at him. But the two horses coming from California, one filly, one colt. Texas Wedge could have run out here in the Siren Lure. I think that on Sunday decided to come out here or out there, excuse me, to Belmont for the. Peter Miller, who's basically owned that division for the last few years, and Alexandra, the filly for Neil Drysdale. I think they're tough. I wouldn't be surprised if they both ran in the money. And then, of course, you got to mention any turf sprint on the East Coast, pure sensation. You keep thinking that he's lost a step, you know, every time, and then sure enough, he comes in and throws a great one. Did not get beat, disgraced at all in the Breeders' Cup. So, you know, some of these horses are going to drift up if one of those. Few of those, you know, get up to the 5-6-1 to range. We might take a play, but you know, some good racing there. Like I said, in California, the fields are a little bit better in some of the races. There's three stakes on Saturday. We'll take a look at. Oh, and before we forget, there's a 2-year-old race again on Saturday, and I hope some of you were backed our friend Louis Mendez last Saturday as he ended up getting kissed. Got kissed up and paid $24. So he's
I saw that. Hammer, hold on one sec. Let's get the stretch call here.
And it's now these two that move to the front. Santiago edging to the right. Mark Scirocco is switched the distance between them with a furlong and a half. A furlong to go is a length and a half. But Santiago is widening the margin at the moment. Mark Scirocco is hanging towards the center of the course. And Santiago pounds on to the line. Santiago wins the Queen's Vase for Ryan Moore and Aidan O'Brien. Mark Scirocco in second. They were clear at the end of Al Dabaran, Born with Pride. Didn't do much too early. Then behind the Nobel Prize. Punctuation also went too hard, came to a full stop.
Well, there you go, and there's a Coolmore success. 7-2 was not favored, was actually the third choice in here, because Berkshire Rocco for Andrew Balding was 5-2, and Born with Pride was 2-1, so some rare value on a Coolmore O'Brien Moore product. That's the Queen's Vase, the Group 2, and leaves us with the Duke of Edinburgh in about half an hour. I'm sorry, Hammer.
No, I have it on in the background here, and when you have the sound down, I didn't realize it, but I've been trying to get up early and watch just to enjoy it, and once again, it looks... I don't know, like very barren without anybody there, especially.
I know.
But a couple more races to talk about maybe tomorrow, Saturday. Yeah, that is tomorrow. The Wilshire, this run early. Neil Drysdale's got a couple in there. Toinette, the obvious favorite, seems to own the place. I give his other horse a small shot, Simply Breathless in there. And Peter Miller has one that I think is going to like the stretch out, Quirrell. So keep an eye on those. But Toinette, like I said, owns Santa Anita. Throws in a clunker every once in a while, but tough there. It's been tough with the stakes out here, and actually a lot of places where the favorites. I mean, last week we liked a couple of horses, and I, you know, you hate talking about the favorites, but if they stand out, you know, if you're playing, you gotta pick them. The Laz Barrera comes down to looks like a two-horse race, Collusion Illusion from Glad. Mark Glad and Ragtime Blues from Baffert. And Mark Glad, keep your eye on him. He's been doing well of late. Really smart trainer, quiet guy, but one of the smartest, great idea man when it comes to things on the backside and with great. I never had a trainer meeting without Mark Glad in it, to tell you the truth. He's, like I said, a sharp guy and good idea man. The Snow Chief, Margo's Bay, and Canyon Crest, I think, in there look like it. And then there's a few stakes on Sunday, and it's, you know, it's kind of, it's not going out with a, you know, with a bunch of cannons going off. Like I said, it'll be, meets is going to be very happily coming to an end. And hopefully things will pick up at Del Mar. They're doing the smart thing, going the 3 days a week, not trying to overdo it. And, you know, we'll enjoy Del Mar. We'll enjoy Saratoga. The schedule came out. Do you know how many days a week they're running at Saratoga, Steve?
Dave Grenick's going to provide the story. Perfect. with the stake schedule and the information.
Okay. Well, fantastic. We miss getting together with the boys here. Jimmy's not here and the rest of the gang, but we'll have our usual Saturday FaceTime handicapping contest, and we'll all enjoy it from home. But miss seeing you guys and enjoy the day, and you know, let's get here. Let's get going. Summer's here, and we feel I think a little bit better each week about things, and I know I feel much better about racing, and let's carry on.
Hammer, enjoy it, and best of luck, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds great. Say hi to Dave, and enjoy the weekend.
Away they go on your Twitter, Rick Hammerly. Let's take a quick break here, Case. I know we got to get one in, and then it'll be a sprint to the wire with Nick Tamaro and Dave Grenick back after this to Belmont Park.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horstman, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Vick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Vick.
We're back, and exactly 40.